Iran busts several Israeli spy networks, arresting agents who had plotted to assassinate an Iranian military official and conduct acts of sabotage. Russia says it's working on extra measures to limit discounts on its oil in response to a price cap imposed by the West on its energy. The British government introduces legislation to curb the strikes, a decision unions have described as undemocratic and unworkable. This is news. Welcome your way from our Tehran studios with me, your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Iran's Minister of Intelligence says it's identified and arrested members of six teams affiliated with the Israeli spy agency. The Mossad agents were plotting to assassinate an Iranian military official and conduct acts of sabotage in Iran. According to the ministry's support network for the Mossad agents was also busted, and more than a dozen of their members were arrested. The ministry also said the mastermind operation was based in a European country, adding that Mossad was trying to use the recent rioting in Iran to carry out its operation. Tehran has said time and again that the recent riots in the country was a plot by Israel and its Western allies. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has censured controversial French weekly Charlie Hebdo for publishing cartoons of the religious and political authority in Iran. Hezbollah called on the French government to take firm measures to punish the perpetrators, and that after the cartoons triggered outrage in Iran. The country has witnessed rallies in different cities over the past days. The foreign ministry also summoned the French ambassador to protest the caricatures and closed the cultural wing of the French embassy in Tehran. Charlie Hebdo's attack on the religious and political authority in Iran follows the magazine's sacrilege against the Prophet of Islam a few years ago that fueled anger across the Muslim world. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinians have held a sit-in in solidarity with prisoners in Israeli jails. Resistance groups also holding a workshop for prisoners on how to tackle the fierce attacks against inmates by the newly formed right-wing Israeli cabinet. Ashraf Shannon reports.
Families of prisoners and their advocates have staged a sit-in inside the office of the International Committee of the Red Cross in the blockaded Gaza Strip on Monday. Their action was in solidarity with thousands of Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails and detention centers. Tel Aviv practices apartheid policies against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, and Al-Quds. Among those apartheid policies is the bad treatment of Palestinian prisoners.
The prisoners are suffering tremendously inside Zionist jails, and we pray for their release. My son was only 17 when he was arrested and has been behind bars since 1992. He's a freedom fighter who fought for the liberation of Al-Quds and Palestine.
Palestinian prisoners who are held in 24 Israeli jails and detention centers are all denied basic human rights.
Prisoners' advocacy groups are calling on the international community to hold the Israeli regime accountable for its grave violations against Palestinian prisoners.
Meanwhile, a workshop was held in the blockaded territory on how to tackle the dangers posed by right-wing Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir on Palestinian prisoners. The workshop was organized by Hamas's Wa'id Prisoners Society and the Islamic Jihad's Mujahid al-Quds Foundation for Prisoners. Attendees discussed ways of confronting threats by the extremist Israeli minister.
It's our duty to protect and fight for Palestinian prisoners amid the ongoing attempts by Ben-Gvir and the Zionist entity to pass a law that allows the execution of Palestinian prisoners as well as the deportation of Palestinian prisoners. We are facing a big Zionist project targeting not only the prisoners but also all aspects of Palestinian existence.
For decades, the Israeli regime has violated all the rights and freedoms granted to prisoners by the Fourth Geneva Convention. Palestinians are calling on the international community to break their silence and help Palestinian prisoners. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
Now, Russia is working on extra measures to limit discounts on its oil in response to the price caps imposed by the West. The Russian energy minister says it will apply monitoring procedures to implement the additional measures. Such discounts are traditionally there for international benchmarks like Brent, but they widened amid Western sanctions on Moscow. Russia has already reacted to the $60 ceiling imposed on its oil price by the West. President Vladimir Putin has signed a decree that prohibits the supply of crude and oil products to nations that abide by the European price cap. The order will take effect on February 1st and will stay effective for 5 months. Speaking of Russia, the country has stressed that the West's military support for Ukraine will only prolong the war and bring more sufferings to the Ukrainian people. And that for last week, France and Germany said that they were planning to send light combat weaponry to Kiev. We've discussed that issue with our guests in our news review program.
Welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, Russia has slammed France and other Western states for their recent decisions to ramp up military support for Kiev, warning that such measures could deepen the suffering of Ukrainians. The Kremlin spokesman has reiterated that Western arms deliveries cannot and will not change anything on the ground. Dmitry Peskov says such moves would not deter Russia from achieving its goals either. Last week, France and Germany announced that they would send light combat vehicles, including tanks, to Kiev to help it fight Russia. Ukraine, which has scored some battlefield successes in recent months, had asked its Western backers for heavier weapons. Moscow, however, has time and again warned that Western leaders are prolonging the conflict by providing weapons to Ukraine. To discuss that more, we're joined by our correspondent Johnny Miller, joining us live from Crimea on the grounds there. Marcus Papadopoulos, historian, political analyst, and author, is also joining us from London. Okay, so Marcus Papadopoulos, considering what's happening on the ground now and the fact that Dmitry Peskov has said sending more weapons to Ukraine cannot and will not change anything on the ground, could you elaborate what he means by that?
I should like to say, first of all, that in recent days, the Ukrainian defense minister said something that I and others have averred ever since the commencement of the Russian military campaign in Ukraine. Namely, the aforementioned minister said that Ukraine is carrying out NATO's mission against Russia, which in simple English means that Ukraine is fighting NATO's war against the Russian Federation. Accordingly, I welcome the candor of the Ukrainian government concerning the reality of the war in Ukraine. And naturally, Western mainstream media chose not to report on the words of the Ukrainian defense minister, which is yet another reason as to why we can consign British mainstream media and Western mainstream media to the gutter. Now, turning to the status on the battlefield in Ukraine, there are numerous factors accounting for why Russia is winning the war and why the Russians will emerge victorious in the war. One such factor concerns Russia's military-industrial complex. The Russian military-industrial complex, which has its origins in the Soviet period, is tasked with and is capable of sustaining the Russian armed forces in a protracted war with the United States of America. It therefore follows that the Russian military-industrial complex is more than capable of sustaining the Russian army in Ukraine. Whatever losses the Russian armed forces have incurred in terms of military hardware, the Russian industrial military complex can replenish those losses very, very quickly. A second factor concerns the vast territory which the Russian army controls in Ukraine, which stretches from the northeast in the Kharkov Oblast, down to the east of Ukraine in the Donbass, and across the south of Ukraine. Indeed, Ukraine has lost most of its Black Sea coastline. And a third factor concerns the grievous losses that the Russian armed forces have inflicted on their Ukrainian counterparts. And I am not just referring to losses which have been incurred by the Ukrainian side since the start of the Russian military campaign in Ukraine. I am also referring to the colossal losses that the Ukrainian army has incurred at Soledar and Bakhmut. Those losses do not amount to hundreds of Ukrainian soldiers killed in action or wounded. No, they amount to thousands upon thousands of Ukrainian soldiers killed in action or wounded, to say nothing of the amount of Ukrainian hardware which has been destroyed by the Russians at Soledar and at Bakhmut. So, in short, Russia can win the war in Ukraine and will win the war in Ukraine because Russia is a military superpower and because the Russian military industrial complex is more than capable of fighting a war against the Ukrainian army, bearing in mind, as I said earlier, that it is tasked with fighting a war, a protracted conventional war, against America.
So, Johnny, you just heard what Marcus Papadopoulos said. I would like to hear your analysis, particularly with respect to the fact that Russia has clearly said that whatever kind of military aid to Ukraine will only prolong the war.
Well, yes, I agree with much of what your other guest says. I think one of the saddest things about this war is that NATO seems absolutely determined to do all it can to try and win when the odds are stacked against them. Of course, living standards are now dropping in European countries. European industry is struggling because of high energy costs, because of this war, because of the sanctions on Russia. But NATO, instead of being concerned with the living standards of their own people and their own economies, seem absolutely determined to win this war against Russia. But as your other guest says, Russia is in a very strong position at the moment. It's mobilized 300,000 soldiers recently. It's also playing a delicate balancing act between only moving a part of its economy onto a war footing, but it can certainly mobilize a lot more people, a lot more of its economy to the war effort if needed. But on the other hand, it's also difficult to see what a win for Russia looks like. Many people in Russia now saying that the only way they can end the war, if NATO continues to support Ukraine militarily, the only way Russia can win is to ultimately enact the full surrender of Ukraine. And of course, Ukraine is still a large country that Russia would be very happy with most of the territory that it's got at the moment. It would like to take the rest of the Donbass region. But what's the saddest thing for myself is that there's very clearly a peace negotiation to be had. I've spent months in Donbass, and I can tell you the Russian-controlled areas of Donbass, I can tell you the vast majority of people there no longer want to be part of Ukraine. Ukraine has been shelling them for 8 years. I've been to the funerals, spoken to the people, been under the shelling myself, and the vast majority of the people there want to join Russia. In the southern regions of Kherson and Zaporizhia, it's more mixed. But there is a peace negotiation to have. There isn't a way to end this war. But of course, that would mean ceding territory to Russia. And there seems to be an effort to try and persuade the European people that there's no way out of this war except to continue to supply weapons to Ukraine. There is another way out of this war, and that's at the negotiating table and by listening to the civilians on both sides of the battle lines.
Thank you very much, Marcus Papadopoulos, historian, political analyst, and author from London, and our very own Johnny Miller from Crimea. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review.
Welcome back. The British government has introduced a bill to Parliament designed to curb the impact of the strikes over pay that continue to paralyze services across the country.
So I'm introducing a bill that will give government the power to ensure that vital public services will have to maintain a basic function by delivering minimum safety levels, ensuring that lives and livelihoods are not lost. Mr. Speaker, we're looking at six key areas, each of them critical for keeping the British people safe and society functioning. These are health, education, fire, rescue, transport, border security, and nuclear decommissioning. We do not want to use this legislation, but we must ensure the safety of the British public. During the passage of the bill, we intend to consult on what an adequate level of coverage looks like in fire, ambulance, and in rail services.
Unions have described the bill as undemocratic and unworkable, urging the lawmakers to reject it. The bill will not be debated on Tuesday and could take months to become law. The opposition Labour Party has said it would repeal the law if it comes to power in a national election expected next year. Britain is experiencing a wave of industrial actions, but workers demanded wages in tandem with rising inflation, which now around 40-year highs. Nurses, ambulance staff, and rail workers are among those who have staged walkouts. So far, talks between the government and the trade unions have failed to produce a breakthrough. The latest data from the European Union's Climate Monitoring Service shows the last 8 years have been the warmest on record globally. According to the Copernicus Climate Change Service, a series of unprecedented natural disasters, likely by climate change, made 2022 the fifth warmest year since modern record keeping began. The data shows Europe as a whole saw the highest increase in temperature, with France, Britain, Spain, and Italy setting new average records. Scorching heat across Europe, coupled with drought, led to thousands of deaths and intense wildfires in countries from Spain to Slovenia, unleashing extensive amounts of emissions. The European Climate Agency has also highlighted other parts of the world that endured heat wave and its impacts. It says flooding in Pakistan affected 33 million people, while drought devastated livestock in Somalia. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
A new study has found that in Britain, people with disabilities are more likely to cut back on energy use and food. Experts had earlier warned about the dire situation in Britain during winter, so in this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Guardian wrote in this regard, disabled people in the UK are much more likely to struggle to heat their homes and cut back on food this winter, according to a report highlighting massive income gaps amid the cost of living squeeze. Research from the Resolution Foundation found people with disabilities had an available amount to spend that was about 44% lower than that of other working-age adults, exposing them hugely to the rising cost of essentials. The think tank said there was a chasm between the underlying disposable incomes of people with a disability and the non-disabled population, according to an analysis of official figures and a YouGov survey of just under 8,000 working-age adults, more than 2,000 of whom reported a long-term illness of disability, highlighting the risks to households struggling with the highest rates of inflation since the early 1980s. It said almost half, that is 48%, of disabled adults said they had to cut back on energy use this winter, compared with almost one-third of people without a disability. Up to two-fifths of people with a disability, 41%, said they could not afford to keep their homes warm, compared with 23% of the non-disabled population. People with a disability are far more likely to be poorer than the rest of the population, with up to a third of adults in the lowest income households having a disability, compared with less than a tenth of those in the richest homes. The Resolution Foundation said the income gaps were only partly explained by lower employment rates among disabled workers. Even after accounting for employment status, more than half of the original income gaps remain, showing that in-work disabled people face an increased risk of being on lower incomes than their peers. Charlie McCurdy, an economist at the Resolution Foundation, said that while fast-rising prices for essentials were affecting people across the UK, people with disabilities were more exposed to the most severe effects. This means people with a disability, who account for a third of the poorest households in Britain, will require additional protection during the cost-of-living crisis, which the government has acknowledged through their cost of living payments, he said. But more policy work will be needed, not just through this crisis, but to make more progress on closing the huge income gaps that already existed between disabled people and the rest of the population. Also, ABC had an eye on this issue, saying while much of the world anxiously waits to see if their economies will tip into a recession next year, the UK may already be in the midst of one. The economy shrank 0.3% between July and September in what Bank of England forecasts say is the start of a prolonged period of negative growth that will last throughout 2023. Part of the problem is inflation, which is at 10.7% and providing persistent feeding through into higher prices for food and housing and demands for higher wages. The cost of living squeeze is being felt all over the world as central banks attempt to tackle spiraling prices with interest rate rises designed to make people spend less. Pent-up demand from the pandemic, global supply shocks from COVID-19, and the Russia-Ukraine crisis have created a complex economic situation. As policymakers attempt to pull the right levers to get the economy back on track, they risk overdoing it, causing consumption to taper off and creating the perfect conditions for a recession. Many predict much of the world will be in such a scenario by next year, and the UK could already be leading the way. Why is Britain said to be the first country into recession and the last country out? Labour leader Keir Starmer asked in Parliament last month. The question followed an OECD report that revealed Britain would plunge to the bottom of the table of G7 leading industrial nations for economic growth over the next 2 years. It also comes amid tough assessments from some economists about the UK's current economic outlook.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
The point when you sit down and make a resolution during this day, you know, there are some things you should reflect about it and consider in what you're planning for this new year. Number one, the main theme and the message that I would like to share with you from the sayings of our A'immah is the issue that your life is a constant path of struggle. And what Imams have emphasized that do not let 2 days be same. Amir al-Mu'minin Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wassalam, in a longer conversation with a person who came from Syria, and he told that, you know, I heard quite great things about you and I would like to ask you a few questions. In that conversation, Amir al-Mu'minin, one of these things that he says, Ya Shaykh, man i'tadala yawmahu fahuwa maghbunun. He was an elderly person. And so he says, a person whose 2 days are same and equal, i'tadala from adl, they are same. Such a person is maghbun. Maghbun means a person who has been, you know, deceived or who has been cheated in the deal. So what the Imam is saying that your next day has to be better than the day which passed. If it is on the same level, then that day you lost. The further explanation of this concept is from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. Where he begins the statement from Amir al-Mu'mineen, the wordings are only slightly changed, where he says, Man istawa yawmahu fahuwa maghbun. A person whose 2 days are same. There was no change in it. No increase in goodness, no decrease in sins, for example, or negative things. Then Imam says he is maghbun. He is cheated or he has been deceived. وَمَنْ كَانَ آخِرُ يَوْمَيْهِ خَيْرُهُمَا. But the person whose second day, means that present day, is better than the yesterday, فَهُوَ مَغْبُوطٌ, then he is a person who is an object of envy. He is a fortunate person. People would like to be like him, whose second day is better than the previous one. وَمَنْ كَانَ آخِرَ يَوْمِهِ شَرُّهُمَا. Now, Amir al-Mu'minin said same. Both days are same. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq says also in the first, category, both days are same. This is where Imam says, if the second day is worse than yesterday, فَهُوَ مَلْعُونٌ. It's very to realize, you know, the word mal'oon is different meanings. It's not always negative that we talk about. When Imam says mal'oon, means he is damned. You know, the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has been taken away at that day. Not necessarily it will continue that way, but on that day, you know, he is really an unfortunate person. وَمَنْ يَرَى وَمَنْ لَمْ يَرَ الزِّيَادَ فِي نَفْسِهِ فَهُوَ إِلَى النُّقْصَانِ. If a person does not see goodness in himself on that day, on the day he is compared to the one which passed, then he is in loss. وَمَنْ كَانَ إِلَى النُّقْصَانِ فَالْمَوْتُ خَيْرٌ لَهُ مِنْ الْحَيَاةِ. And when a person is in loss of that kind, then death is preferable for him than life. It doesn't mean don't go and commit suicide, no. What it means is that constantly work to make the next day better than the previous day. The message is about, you know, taking this issue serious, that life is a constant struggle. And we always have, you know, there would be up and downs, yes. But Imam has used these very strong words, maghboon, mabtoon, maghboot, and mal'oon. Just to emphasize the point that you have to be in that second one, where the second day would be the better one than the previous one. I think it's the matter of time that we sometimes forget about it. You know, Amir al-Mu'mineen says, تَزَوَّدْ مِنْ يَوْمِكَ لِغَدِكَ. You know, make provision today for tomorrow. Now, what does tomorrow mean? It could be tomorrow, which is tomorrow, and it probably refers to the tomorrow as the hereafter. Make provision for the akhirah, because it is in this dunya that you will be able to build your akhirah. You will not get a chance to do anything there. Whatever you have there, you have to prepare in this dunya. And so Imam is saying, tazawwad, tazawwad. Zadiraha, as we call it, which means, you know, to make provision for the journey. When you travel, you carry everything that you need during the journey and when you reach to the destination. And so Imam is saying, tazawwad min yawmika lilighadik, you know, prepare, make the provision for your journey in the future towards the hereafter. Waqtanim afu zaman, and seize the time which is remaining. وَانْتَهِرْ فُرْصَةَ الْإِمْكَانِ. And whenever the opportunities come, seize those opportunities. Do not let them go. And this is where we have to realize, the time which has gone is gone. It cannot come back. There is no use in sitting there and regretting what happened in the past. What I didn't do, what you didn't do, what you didn't do. You can't do anything. It's gone. The future is not guaranteed. The only thing that I have is the present. And this is where we should not, you know, waste the present about sitting and regretting the past and dreaming about the future. Rather, we have to use the present in order to build our dunya here and the akhirah also. And this is where, you know, the emphasis has always been in the ahadith of the Imam Amir al-Mu'minin Ahl al-Balagha. In one of his sayings, he says, وَالْفُرْصَةُ تَمُرُّ مَرَّ السُّحَابِ. You know, the opportunities come and go, the way the clouds go by. And so you have to realize, فَانْتَهِزُ فُرْصُ الْخَيْرِ. The opportunities of doing good, you know, seize them. Do not let them go. And once it's gone, it's gone. There's no, you know, benefit in sitting and, you know, wondering about it. Yes, we have to think to learn lesson from what happened, but not to the at the expense of losing the time that we have in the present here. As far as the importance of time is concerned, there is a very beautiful hadith from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. when he compares the importance of time, he compares with something whose importance is known to us. You know, many times we have two items, one whose value is known, other is not. And so we always say, this is like that. You know, why is oil known as black gold? What is the relationship of oil with gold? One is liquid, other is solid. This is black, this is yellow. You know, there are no similarity. It's just the value. Because everybody knows the importance of gold, so they say this is black gold. There was a time when salt was very important, especially in North Africa in the medieval times, and that was almost traded equal to gold. So those days, salt was gold. These days for us, time is gold, actually. But Imam has put it in a very different way. He says, لَيْسَ شَيْءٌ عَضُّ مِنْ قَلْبِكَ وَوَقْتِكَ. He has related that to your heart. In your heart, in your body, the most important thing is your heart. And Imam says there is nothing more important than your heart and your time. And so this is where we have to realize that when the time comes, you know, we have to seize the moment, especially, you know, when we talk about furasul khair, you know, the opportunities to do good as much as, you know, we have the time and opportunity to do that.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Whenever there is a show of solidarity with Palestine or blasting the Zionist regime's attacks against Palestinians in any corner in the world, Western regimes try to label it as anti-Semitism. Multiple U.S. cities have adopted a definition of anti-Semitism that silences Palestinians and expands surveillance. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Truth Out noted, in multiple cities across the U.S., the right-wing push for new laws to silence criticism of the Zionist regime for its human rights violations has reached a crescendo. As part of a growing international effort, the Zionist regime lobby groups have convinced local jurisdictions in several U.S. states to adopt the controversial and overbroad definition of anti-Semitism used by the International Remembrance Alliance, IHRA, which classifies virtually all expression in support of Palestinian rights as anti-Jewish. In California, the West Hollywood, Manhattan Beach, and Los Angeles City Councils each adopted the IHRA definition in the last 2 months. In Maryland, the Montgomery County Council did the same on November 2nd. The adoption of the IHRA definition comes amid recent high-profile incidents of anti-Semitism, namely Kanye West's incendiary comments about Jewish people, and former President Trump hosting outspoken white nationalist, Nick Fuentes at his Mar-a-Lago estate just a week after announcing his 2024 run. Indeed, those in Montgomery County who voiced support for that definition reference West's hateful comments as an example of why it needed to be enshrined as policy. However, while purporting to combat anti-Semitism, the IHRA definition is primarily designed to shield the fabricated regime of Israel, or the Zionist entity, from criticism and ultimately from efforts towards BDS, that is boycott, divestment, sanctions movement. 7 of the IHRA definition's 11 contemporary examples of anti-Semitism focus on the Zionist regime, conflating the Israeli regime with Judaism as a whole. Among them are applying double standards to the Zionist regime, or claiming that Israel is a racist endeavor. Israeli lobby groups are weaponizing the IHRA definition to punish and threaten constitutionally protected speech, in particular that of Palestinians, describing the Zionist regime's brutal military rule and denial of Palestinian freedom. Even the lead drafter of the IHRA definition, Kenneth Stern, has argued against its use in legislation or policy, stating that it serves as an attack on academic freedom and free speech. When adopted by municipalities, the IHRA definition expands the scope of policing by giving law enforcement yet another tool and pretends to surveil communities who speak out for Palestinian rights. For instance, when West Hollywood officials adopted the IHRA definition, they claim that it serves as an important tool for law enforcement to identify, measure, monitor, and ultimately combat anti-Semitism, much like the post-9/11 counter-terror surveillance programs that devastated Muslim, Arab, Black, and South Asian immigrant communities in the name of national security. Will the IHRA definition measure public safety in terms of how many people that law enforcement can censor, surveil, and wrongfully criminalize? For decades, the fabricated regime of Israel, the Zionist entity, has faced increasing international condemnation for its racial discrimination and violent displacement of Palestinians. International watchdogs Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have both released reports accusing the Zionist regime of committing apartheid. Now, the IHRA definition is attempting to smear those criticisms themselves as racist. Black and brown activists challenging racist surveillance by the Los Angeles Police Department, LAPD, recognize the irony of this development. Akhil Gopal, a member of the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition based in Skid Row neighborhood of downtown Los Angeles, compares the logic of the IHRA definition to similar legislation that criminalizes predominantly black communities for criticizing police violence. The IHRA definition mirrors Blue Lives Matter bills, which treat law enforcement as a marginalized class. It is part of an effort to embed pro-Israel advocates within legal anti-discrimination, civil rights, and hate crime infrastructures as a supposedly marginalized identity in order to weaponize the language of hate and extremism against Palestinians. Gopal told Truth Out, "When the IHRA definition is adopted by municipalities, it encourages law enforcement to surveil communities for supposed infractions. As a coalition, we have been organizing to expose how surveillance is not just an invasion of privacy, but an inherent part of criminalization." According to research attained by Stop LAPD Spying, at least one academic paper funded by the Department of Homeland Security has already suggested using the IHRA definition as an indicator of extremism in its widely denounced federal surveillance program, Countering Violent Extremism. Community organizations, civil liberties groups, and policy experts have fiercely opposed CVE since it was launched, citing the ways in which the program criminalizes constitutionally protected speech, religious practices, and political activism. The adoption of the definition by DHS would be a dangerous expansion and continuation of the war on terror's devastating impact on Muslim and immigrant communities across the U.S. Selin Cassini, a member of the Palestinian Youth Movement, PYM, in Los Angeles, explains that she has worked with the Stopped LAPD Spying, Black Alliance for Just Immigration, Vigilant Love, and other community organizations to oppose CVE, which racially profile communities and deputizes mental health providers, teachers, and other service providers to report community members to law enforcement under false pretenses of extremism. If the IHRA definition were to be incorporated into CVE, we can expect an increase of reports accusing pro-Palestine speech and activism as extremists, she said. This is not only an attempt to intimidate our communities and allies from building power through local organizing, but to also restrain free speech, consequently diminishing the health of our communities. Palestine Legal, a civil rights organization dedicated to providing legal support to the movement for Palestinian rights, has recently discovered through public records requests that pro-Israel organizations have sent PYM's flyers and materials to law enforcement, asking that Cassini's organization be put under police surveillance and shut down. The attempts to push the IHRA definition into law are just the latest example of the long-standing right-wing effort to redefine anti-Semitism as characterized primarily by criticism of the Zionist regime, rather than as an interconnected element of white supremacy and all forms of racial bigotry. Roughly half of the incidents of suppression Palestine legal response to each year include false accusations of anti-Semitism, totaling 1,017 incidents from 2014 to 2021. The adoption of the IHRA definition in multiple cities is not only dangerous, but also surprisingly regressive considering the broad array of institutions that have rejected it. Both Palestinian and Jewish human rights organizations, as well as major newspaper editorial boards, have opposed codifying the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism into law, including the ACLU, the National Lawyers Guild, the Center for Constitutional Rights, Palestine Legal, Jewish Voice for Peace, the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, and the Washington Post. Cassini and Gopal's organizations continue to resist the IHRA definition and hope community opposition will prevent it from continuing to spread across the U.S. and beyond.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A few strive in the cause of God, victory will definitely follow. The following is a part of the speech delivered on June 28, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of top officials and employees of the judiciary.
I have heard people say that we do not have a law about this. First of all, the existing laws can be used for this, and based on these laws, the related ruling can be reached. But if you do not have a law for a certain situation, quickly make a law. These are important things and is among very important issues. Of course, sometimes the judiciary itself is the source of some of the news. Sometimes a member of the judiciary mentions something about a people. Sometimes A member of the judiciary mentions something about a person or about an organization, and his statements affect public opinion. The last thing I would like to recommend is for you to follow up on the files you open and to finish them. Finish the various cases involving public affairs that the judiciary has started, for example, about some factories, some illegal seizures, and the like. You shouldn't open a wound and leave it untreated. Of course, there is usually a big commotion in the beginning when something like this is being done. Then it is slowly forgotten. Whatever you start, whatever issue it is, he mentioned central issues. Central issues are very good. Especially pursue them because of their priority. Finish the matter and complete the case. Then you can move aside.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Your work is hard, truly hard. Indeed, the work of the judiciary is one of the jobs that is very difficult. I have been in the ongoing executive affairs of the revolution since the beginning of the revolution. I have always said that I am afraid of accepting to be in charge of matters related to the judiciary branch. And I have avoided doing so because this is a very difficult job and it is very demanding. You have taken on much work on yourselves. Well, the reward for this is just as much. That is, in proportion to the amount of the work that is done. The divine reward that is given is also just as much, God willing. Follow up on the work that is being done for the sake of God. Follow up on work while benefiting from divine guidance. God willing, you will be given the divine reward. You may do a good action at times and no one realizes it, not even your manager or your boss. Your subordinates may not understand what you have done either. For example, you may have worked a few hours overtime, or maybe you did a job carefully, or perhaps you fought diligently against corruption and dishonesty. No one may realize what you have done, but God's scribes realize.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.